Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Welcome, everybody. Sorry for the delay in the startup, but as always, the glorious interwebs of the radios struggle with us. Thanks for joining us. I am the Nun. In tonight for the Stew is Tommy the Bat Boy Amenta. What's going on, Tommy?
I apologize to everyone. I'll take the heat round for that. The new guy decided to start pushing buttons. You know, there's a fritzy sparky thing, and, you know, my big brother.
No, it's all right. Sometimes the flux capacitor gets the best of me, but, you know, no big deal. We're back. We're live, and we got a great show, so excited to have you. Thanks for joining. What's going on, Tom?
Dude, I am I'm actually heading to the land of our good friend Matt Black Five Burden tomorrow morning, early a.m. I'll be in Chicago for a couple of days, hanging out, doing the consultant life thing. I'll tell you what, man, that is like both – it is a fun gig, but it's also one of those things where you don't have anyone to, like, blame. Like, you can't look at, like, the private or the new guy and be like, you screwed up if – something else didn't happen and just decide that you want to sit around all day and, you know, watch Daredevil on Netflix. So, you know, a little bit of an adjustment, but I'll be there for a couple of days. Hopefully going to get a chance to see the Cubbies continue to put a beat down on people. And then also, as my favorite Canadian, the Stanley Cup playoffs will be starting tomorrow with my beloved Blackhawks. So hopefully I'll be singing Chelsea Dagger. We'll knock back a couple of pints with some people tomorrow night, and I'll probably text you and remind you where your Canucks are not this season. You know?
Two things I was going to say, like, what's it like to know somebody that has a team in the playoffs? because my team is not. However, I am a season ticket holder to the Texas Stars, the farm team to the Dallas Stars.
Yep.
And by being a season ticket holder to the Texas Stars, I strongly believe that gives me a sense of ownership in the Dallas Stars, knowing that some of the guys that I've rooted for and met this year are up there playing right now. Guys like Steven Johns, who Chicago didn't think was good enough to stay there. Guys like Sharp, who Chicago didn't think were good enough to stay there. And
casualties of the cap, my friend.
Yeah, but no, I'm super excited for Dallas. You know, the Texas Stars also, you know, are you know, advanced into the Calder Cup playoffs. So it, while Vancouver is not, and I cry sweet tears, I'm also happy that, you know, I still get to enjoy some playoff hockey.
Hey, you know what? It could be worse. You could be a Buffalo Sabres fan. And I'm just waiting for my phone to blow up if Stu's listening.
Yeah, no, for sure, you know, Stu's actually in midair right now, flying back to the great state of New York. He's flying, you know, back home, so when he gets back, he'll be downloading this and listening. And so, yeah, as a little truth bomb, while I'm fortunate enough to have two teams, And another reason why I believe that I'm legally allowed to support the Dallas Stars and the Texas Stars is because their ownership is also from British Columbia. So
no, I didn't know that.
So the ownership group, Northland Properties, you know that, and they tried originally buying the Vancouver Canucks, and you know they didn't make the bid, they didn't get it. So instead, they bought the Dallas Stars, and they've turned it into a fantastic franchise. They're doing great stuff. So I feel legally like I can get away with cheering for them and not being like someone accusing me of being a Fairweather fan.
Yeah. Nah, I'll tell you what, and we probably like have to like, what are these clowns talking about? But if Tyler Seguin didn't go down with that Achilles tear, that's such a tough lineup, because you know the Blackhawks go six deep with their forwards better than any team in the league. I believe that. But that third line that Dallas had when Seguin was playing and they were firing on all cylinders was just also just so tough. But it's going to be fun. I really, out of all the sports, and I love sports, period, you know, MMA to football to baseball to, you know, anything. Hockey, playoff hockey is just unlike any other sport. Like, the 8 team can beat the 1 seed, and it's just chaos. And especially when it goes to overtime, where all hangs on that next puck going in. It's just, it's so intense. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's like, I too am a fan of all athletics, of all sports. I struggle watching some live. You know, people make fun of me because I can watch golf all day long. And I can find it, you know, entertaining and enjoyable and suspenseful. Can't watch baseball on television. I can watch baseball live all day long. You know, like where you feel like you're part of the game, you know, you feel that.
Yep.
The ambience of being part of the crowd, the organ playing, the cheers, like love that. But when it comes down to like being able to like watch sports and being captivated, nothing gets me like hockey, you know, be it live or at home. Like I feel the same enjoyment. I get the same pleasure out of watching hockey on my couch, you know, wherever it might be. So like, I'm pretty excited about that. So there's lots going on.
If you haven't seen a pro hockey game live, or you haven't been to a high level like a UFC or a Bellator fight live, like you've got to make that part of your bucket list when it comes to live sports. There's just you can't replicate it. But yeah, I am hopefully going to be in Wrigleyville tomorrow night. You know, with the Blackhawks. Blackhawks t-shirt and a Blackhawks hat on, you know, screaming my lungs out. So fingers crossed we get done with the entrepreneur stuff early enough to do it.
Yeah, no, like one, trying to get done with the entrepreneur stuff is a never ending battle in my world, but that's why we do it. Right. That's why we strike out on our own, because, you know, some days are jeans and t-shirts days and some days are not. But, you know, Tommy, we got an amazing show tonight. Like, so
we
want to talk about the guy that's coming on a little bit. So his name is Jeremy Mahan, and I've known this guy, this cat, this dog, for this devil dog for a couple of years. And I met him through one of my better friends, a guy that you and I both know very well, Chad Robichaux.
Robo.
And, so Jeremy's just like a special human. You know, it's really kind of cool. You know, one, he's got like the epitome of like a drill sergeant's voice, and like the audience are going to eat that stuff up, and they're going to go wild. But, you know, he's this hard charger, you know, he came back, you know, and, you know, there's lots to talk about, but his platoon, which I've become like really close to several members of the platoon, his platoon leader, platoon commander, sorry, the Marines call it commanders, but his platoon commander and I, have become quite close over the past couple of years, as well as a couple other members of his platoon. And I've, you know, dealt with them in a broad capacity of ways, some business related, some like recreationally outdoors in terms of hunting and fishing, some going through like different, you know, training programs and stuff. But he's a member of just an impressive platoon. It was a large platoon that it actually is credited with, you know, taking Saddam's castle in Baghdad. And, you know, one of my favorite pictures is, like, Mad Dog Mattis, like, walking into, like, that palace after they took it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some bad reporter, like, trying to cheese dick his way, like, into an interview. And Mad Dog Mattis, like, straight giving them the, why are you even breathing my air look? But, you know, there's really great stuff. But without further ado, I'd like to bring Jeremy on the air and welcome him to the show. Jeremy, how you doing, brother?
Hey, man. How's it going, Toby?
Oh, living the American dream, man. Living the American dream. How are things at 4 Ounce Fight Club tonight?
Man, things are they're really busy over here at the gym. We just had a couple guys fight last weekend. We had one of our UFC guys, Derek Lewis, fought last Saturday and knocked out Gabriel Gonzaga in the first round.
Yep.
So that was awesome. And then we have so many fighters there. We have about 5 people getting ready for fights in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, busy, man. Fun, but busy.
Well, you know, since you brought it up, I want to go ahead and give your man, the Black Beast, the ultimate shout-out because he, like, in his post-fight interview said, like, he needed to take a shower because he had, like, a 1970 hairy porn star on top of him for 2 minutes.
That was awesome.
And, like,
It was so good.
I mean, like, that's awesome. And then, so in addition to that, he's also got the longest-running knockout streak in the UFC. He's, like, he's surpassed even the great Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor.
Yeah, man, Derek.
No, seriously, he's got the longest running knockout streak in the UFC right now.
Yep, he does.
Yeah, he's a huge, huge, strong man, and probably when you get to know him, like, complete opposite of what you'd expect. I think guys are starting to see that now that he's coming out doing more interviews and stuff in the UFC. Just totally, totally not what you expect from a man. Awesome guy. I love him. You know, great dad, great fighter. Just all around good guy. I can't say enough, you know, good things about Derek.
Well, you know,
I'm really,
like,
happy for
you. You actually, your camp down there, I'm using the term camp loosely. I've had the pleasure of being your guest there once or twice. And you got Daniel Panetta. You got you got Herrig, right?
So we have Tanya Evinger. They're the Invicta 135 champ. Yeah.
She's like, okay, one, like, she's a firecracker. Let's get that out of the way. Like, and I love her.
She's hilarious.
Like,
I love her.
She's
one of the craziest people I've ever met.
she reaches into her pocket. Like, Matt Best likes to rap about it, but this girl legitimately reaches into her pocket and pulls out zero. You know, like.
Yep.
She pulls out zero. She says what she wants to say. She is who she truly is. She's true to herself, and she's me. Like, let's give the girl some props because she's talented. She's champ for a reason, and I truly believe, without a doubt, that Zuffa are afraid of her. You know, like, they're afraid of her. Like, they were afraid of Holly.
Yep.
So. Yeah, it's funny because I know here comes the name drop. I know Julie Kedzie pretty well, the matchmaker over there at Invicta, and she loves it when Tanya can fight. Like, she absolutely loves it because she is just like you said, she pulls out zero and she's coming to fight. Like, she has no chill. That's the other thing. She pulls out zero and she has no chill. So I love it when I hear she's stepping into the cage.
I mean, the thing with Tanya too, she's on the. You know, she's on an 8-fight winning streak. The last 6 of those have been finishes. And she really isn't looking for the finish. She's not. I mean, she has a great submission game, not looking for it. She's not only looking for knockouts. Tanya, she actually just wants to cause pain and hurt you. And that's silly, but that's where me and her really clicked, when we started kind of sharing our philosophies on fighting and stuff. And, you know, she's all just about taking your soul. I'm like, man, that's what I'm all about, you know, just – taking someone and just beating it out of them, so they just want to give it to you. They don't want to be in there with you anymore. You know, so many people just hit them, but you literally have from their toes to the tip of their head, you can punch on and grind and just hurt. So, you know, it's pretty awesome. We're kind of unique, and we hit it off when it came to that. And you know, I've been Tanya's coach for the last 2 years now, and she's doing great, and you know, we have a good thing going.
She honestly strikes me as the type of person that would like be foot stomping people, you know, in clinch drills, you know, practice.
You have no
like,
idea
just,
in practice, man. She cut me wide open 2 weeks ago when we started this camp, and she, you know, didn't care. Thought it was, you know, thinks it's funny. Literally, if you watch our last couple of fights, we train like that every day. I have some different pads and stuff that I've, you know, acquired, and I'll put these things on, and we go through like a fight, and you can watch our training, and it's identical to the fight. You know, we're throwing elbows the whole time. She's elbowing the legs, the body, the face. You know, everything you see her do, we're doing it in training, and it's paying off. You know, she's a champ, so.
It's awesome.
No, like, who'd have thought, right? Like, a couple years ago, you know, you're this, you know, hard-charging sergeant in this cap platoon, and, you know, you're, like, crossing the border. You guys are fighting your way up. And now, like, you're the main man at a very successful fight camp. I mean, let's just call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
A very successful team. You know, 4 Ounce is, like, really building a name for itself. Bellator comes to town. You're retired. You're retired.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you're like, you know, I'm going to do a fight, I'm going to say it wrong. I'm, like, all tongue-twisted today. But, you know, you do this, like, jiu-jitsu match, and, you know, like, you kind of hold back, but the jiu-jitsu match was just kind of a tune-up so that you could, you know, go into the cage and, like, get it going again with Bellator. You know, Bellator come to town, and you come out of retirement and, like, get it done. I mean, that's, like, I mean, people can say that. They were like, oh, yeah, Coker called me. And I was like, yeah, bro, I can scrap. Yeah, it's good.
You know what? It's funny because, I mean, it wasn't, you know, far from that. I had retired, like, 2 years before that. I had to have knee surgery. It was, like, right at 2 years. And, man, the recovery took a year, and then it was, you know, another year of just training. I'm about to be 37. So, you know, I thought I was retired, and I wasn't really looking to fight. But when my other students and my other fighters, you know, I still spar and stay in great shape because that's just what I love to do. And, you know, they'd be like, Coach, when are you gonna fight again? I'm like, you know, man, I'm retired, but if it was the right fight, you know, I would. And they're like, what's the right fight? I'm like, I don't know. Something here at home, but on TV, but like Bellator, UFC, and so then this phone call comes, and it's literally like everything that I described is like what would bring me back for a fight. I mean, it was a veteran outreach thing for and this initiative that Comcast is doing. So who's the ones that own Viacom? So Viacom was doing this deal, and it was literally like. It's their first fight for veterans where they're trying to show veterans who are continuing to stay active and to stay fit out of the military. So it was like, this is really a cool deal, man. I got to fight, you know, at home at the Toyota Center, be on TV, do it for veterans. It was, you know, it wins. So it was an amazing experience there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, yeah, one, winning at home, I don't think anything can beat that, right? Because, you know, you got – you know, your posse in the crowd, and then, you know, like, it's a big stage, and then, I mean, I was just, the whole time, I was like, man, this is awesome. It couldn't, one, I don't think it could happen to a better guy.
Oh, man,
you know, I love watching
I appreciate
him.
It.
Well, I love watching your weigh-ins, too. So, Tom, I'll let Jeremy tell you what he's got on his chest, but, you know, Jeremy's got, like, this Arabic tattoo, what does it say?
Make peace or die. It's the 1-5 motto.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's got, like,
love it.
The 1-5 Marine, like, make peace or die in Arabic tattooed across his chest. So, like, I guess it was your second to last pro fight. You know, he, like, he's ends up fighting this Iraqi, you know, and, like, the dude was a good dude, right? Like, he's a legit fighter.
Yeah.
He's, like,
no.
this isn't a joke. He's, like, a class act. He's a great fighter. But, like, and, you know, Jeremy's, like, extremely, like, peaceful, you know, and, like, you know, classy as always. You know, he's not, like, your stupid smack talker. You know, he's a professional. He's what a mixed martial artist should be. You know, it comes time for the weigh-in, though. Like, you know, you got your shirts off and like they're at the square off and he's got like in Arabic, make peace or die across his chest, you know, and like the Iraqi's like, I can read that. I know what that says. And Jeremy's like, well, then you know what's coming.
Well, hey, at least you got the confirmation that the tattoo artist didn't screw it up and like put the menu for Kung Pao Chicken on there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
like,
I actually had our interpreter actually draw it out because I didn't want any issues like that coming back to the States. So I had our interpreter draw it out. And I took that into the tattoo shop to get it done.
Dude, so I tried. I tried to speak Arabic in college, and I'm telling you right now, like, there are not a lot of things in my life I could say that I tried really hard at and actually applied to and ultimately did not succeed doing. Learning how to speak Arabic was certainly one of those fall-on-your-face moments and be like, that's just not for me. Everything's backwards. Like, it's that, like, we write in the U.S. left to right. They write right to left. Some of those sounds, like, depending on what part of the, you know, the sort of Arabic world you are, sound totally different. It was, it's brutal. And I'm not very smart. I'm a grunt. So that did not go over well.
So Jeremy, while we got you, and we, you know, Tom and I are, like, both, you know, big MMA fans. So, like, kind of give us a quick little, like, snapshot about, like, your career. The inspiration to get started, you know, the foundation to which, you know, you turn pro, and like now, like you've come out of retirement, your knee's healthy, you have a Bellator win under your belt, where you're headed.
Man, you know, I kind of started fighting after I got back from overseas, and I was just getting into, you know, I really missed that adrenaline rush that you would get from being over in a combat zone. And we went to coming back from Lake Conroe, and went to a bar, and they were having some kickboxing matches there. And I'm like, man, this is like pretty cool. I should probably, you know, check this out. And so I talked to the guy who was a promoter and asked him how I do that. And he said, well, there's one next month, and you apply, you know, you do your little thing online, and blah blah blah. And so the next month, I started kickboxing, and you know, did pretty well at that. And after a while of kickboxing, I started, you know, doing more grappling and got into MMA. My first pro fight in 2006 was actually against Daniel Pineda, who's been a teammate of mine ever since that day. He beat me really, really quickly with grappling. And that was something, like I said, I didn't really know too much about grappling. So my pro career started off kind of rocky. My first couple of fights were losses because I didn't know how to grapple. I'm the type of person that when I can't do something, it's going to drive me to do it. So I started really focusing on my grappling. You know, kind of fast forward 10 years later, I got my black belt in jiu-jitsu. And, you know, my record and my career has really turned around. I was coming off of, like, about a five-fight winning streak. Four fights, and then I lost one that was a little questionable due to a referee's call on some punches to the back of the head. So I didn't really, you know, get too upset about that. Went in and won another legacy fight, but I blew my knee out during that fight. And, you know, just getting older and everything, I thought my career would probably be done. And then I just keep training, and this Bellator opportunity came up. And, man, everything really felt great. I felt like I was, you know, moving like I hadn't moved since my 20s, man. I felt really good in that fight. And was finally able to really put some things together. My wrestling had always been the hole in my game, and I've focused so much on my wrestling as of late. And actually that credit comes back to Chad out there in West Cliff getting introduced me to Randy Couture and having me train with Randy and with his coach Brad Anderson. It was just it was almost some life-changing kind of stuff they showed me and discussed with me about, you know, just ways to fight and things I should do fighting-wise. And so I started putting all this focus into wrestling, and my wrestling has improved so much that, man, I don't know. You know, again, I'm not shut out to the idea of fighting if it's a good fight, and more and more fights look like good fights to me now, so who knows.
So you mentioned
that. No, I was going to talk about being up there in West Cliff. One, you know, the air's thin. And two, like, the air's thin with possibly the most beast man ever, Brad Anderson. Like,
yeah.
That dude is just, like, so he's just an amazing guy. And, like, there's obviously a reason why Randy Couture is one of the most successful Hall of Famers ever. And the fact that these two, you know, did everything together from their time in the Army together, you know, on the All-Army wrestling team to, like, following on their careers, you know, Brad going into Federal Corrections and, you know, being at Supermax, and then Randy obviously doing what Randy does. But, you know, that experience, I mean, what a blessing to get that, you know, especially, like, Brad Anderson. Like, that dude's just the most scary dude. Like Randy Couture walks in the coffee shop, you know, you're just like, oh, it's Randy Couture. Brad Anderson walks in the coffee shop, you're like, oh, shit. You get scared.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the but, man, like, that's awesome. So, like, you're open. You're open for a fight, you know, like, that's what we like to hear.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I'm open for it. The thing is, too, is that with my schedule right now, I have some other fighters that I'm really put with. I don't take on all of the fighters that we have. You know, there's some that I really work with a lot, and right now they're just so busy that my focus is really on getting them better. I want to see them when they still have a lot left in their careers. I'm more or less just fighting because I love to fight. You know, I'm not trying to necessarily take it anywhere other than just I like to fight. So, you know, the others with Tanya and I got a couple amateurs that are going to debut here next month that I'm really excited about. So, you know, there's just a lot of guys, and, you know, I kind of put them first, but a lot of that stuff I think comes just, you know, from the military experience and stuff. I mean, that's just kind of what NCOs do. You know, we put our guys, you know, before us, but at the same time, I lead from the front, so I'm training with them every day, and I'm getting better. I'm getting in better shape, stronger, learning more. I'm always open to, you know, to make corrections and to learn new things. So, you know, as that goes, I mean, who knows, you know, who knows how much longer it could go. Definitely not trying to have, you know, three or four fights a year, but, you know, one, possibly two a year. That's something I'm interested in, I'm up to. I'm kind of leaning toward maybe doing a boxing match this year. Boxing, I've done pro Muay Thai, I've done pro Jiu-Jitsu, I've done pro MMA. I've had a couple amateur boxing I did, but, you know, pro boxing is something I'd kind of like to take a look at, too. I think it's my strongest skill set that I've never got to really put on display. So, you know.
Well, you know, so, I'm interested in seeing that from the spectator side.
So I do got to ask, just because Chad Robo is a mutual friend of all of ours, and I have been on the mats with him, and that little dude and his, once he grabs you and he decides he wants to turn you into a pretzel, is just annoying, to say the least. So have you ever been on the mats with Robo?
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah, many times.
Yeah.
Like, Robo's, like, put me to sleep. Like, embarrassingly, he put me to sleep in front of my daughter. He put me to sleep in front of my father.
Oh, dude.
My family, he has not put me to sleep in front of.
Yeah, dude, legit. So my question to me is, like, do you guys, like, grapple and, you know, Chad does his thing, and do you ever just hit the point where you're, like, grab your shin pads, grab your gloves, it's on? Like, do you ever just, like, all right, forget this whole ground game thing, we're going to bang? Like, let's go, buddy. Like, does that ever happen, and how's that work out?
Actually, yeah, that's happened. That's happened on more than one occasion out there in West Cliff. You know, Chad kills me. When we do, if we're in a gi, kills me in a gi. We do pretty fair with one another. No gi. I'm not much bigger than Chad. I fight at 145. I walk around about between 155 and 160. So really about the same weight as Chad walks around. He's probably a little heavier than that. But you know, yeah, there's a. Those times up there where it's, I'm like, okay, Chad, we got like 10 more minutes left of jiu-jitsu, and then, you know, and then we're sparring, and he's like, oh, man, you know, like, we're going to get in. Chad tries to say, oh, I got to go do some Mighty Yoke stuff. I got to go, like, no, we got to finish this out. we ain't going nowhere. You don't got no Mighty Oak stuff. You can finish this. So and
wrap them up.
You know, yeah, but no, we've already had your farm. We're gonna do something else. So yeah.
Well, I remember a couple of heavy sparring sessions up in Westcliff that, you know, got a little intense. Marcus Dupar, you know, he had a pro fight lined up, and you, his chin and your shin met, and, like, that ended his fight. Like, he didn't go on to fight because he did pass medical. You know, like, there were some good sparring sessions up there.
You know what, though, Toby? I mean, and Marcus is a friend of mine, and so I don't mean it anyway in a bad way. But, you know, that could have been a blessing in disguise. You know, I heard he really wasn't able to train a lot for that fight. He was working, you know, so they were already kind of talking to him about, hey, maybe you shouldn't do this and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I mean, it just it worked itself out.
Yeah, no, like Marcus, you know, good dude. But, no, he probably wasn't as prepared for that fight as he should have been. But, man, I tell you, like, one thing, like rolling in Magnolia – you know, or down in Houston and San Antonio with Chad, and then rolling up there in Westcliff, you know, I found like it was like my chest is heavy and I cannot breathe. You know, like you know, he already is like he's the heaviest 135er like on the planet. You know, because he like has like that special like skill of like turning 135 pounds into a 400 pound gorilla on your chest. You know, take fact that the air is, like, thin and you can't do it. Like, there was one time, like, he submitted me in side control just by laying on me, and it was the most humiliating thing. I was just like, I'm going out, bro. And, you know, he's like, no, you just need to, like, I'm like, no. And I was out. I was like, you know, but.
Dude. And his
that
son,
air up there
like
was,
that,
like, intense.
Oh, I realized I was in trouble when Robo let his son, and this was a few years ago, so I think he was, like, 13, 14 at the time, like, he has a son, like, start grappling with me, and it's, like, the only reason that I'm doing anything is because I'm, like, 50 pounds heavier than the kid. Like, all the technique and everything is there, and finally it was, like, I'm going to Hulk smash my way out of this, and I'm, like, this is not a good look for the 30-year-old man to, you know, basically be, like, power picking up the kid. I should probably stop doing this. But at the same time, I'm like, if I don't do it, I'm getting submitted. So,
and
that
no,
whole,
no.
That whole family knows how to straight roll.
And no, and in Hunter's case, like, I do the same thing. Like, every time, like, you know, probably once a month, I feel like I'm rolling out there with one of those cats. And, like, in Hunter's case, I just use brute strength and my, like, size advantage to, like, you know, not get embarrassed because, like, that kid is, like, impressive. But what's even more impressive is his youngest. His youngest is Hayden. And so when they moved from Texas to Colorado, both Hayden and Hunter were state champions in Texas. When they moved to Colorado, they qualified to go to the state championships in Colorado, and they both won that. So they're probably, like, the only brothers – in the history of America to hold state championships in both Texas and Colorado simultaneously. You know, like some of the most impressive things, you know, Hunter wrestled in high school, was tremendously gifted, you know, immediately lettered, you know, went all the way up to the finals, you know, just an amazing talent. That kid now is an Anglico Marine, United States Marine Corps Anglico. You know, like, you know, no big deal. all 135 pounds of them. Like, and that's his walking around weight. I love little Hunter, though. Like, that's my
with
dog
with
right
gear.
There. With gear, yeah. And, like, a bucket of water freshly dumped on him.
Yeah, right? He's not a big dude, but he is the absolute textbook definition of it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. Because that dude, I mean, even when we rolled a couple of times, he was like, I'm coming for you. Like, let's go. I don't care that you're big or bigger. I'm like,
no,
I'm probably about your size, Jeremy.
What's that?
No, like, and he's got a standing invitation from, like, you know, Mick Maynard, you know, the guy that's got legacy, you know, like, Hunter can, even though he tested the waters there and he didn't fare, that well in his first, bout. Just I think, the overall experience versus the actual match got him. But he could be, just like Chad. I mean, I think both those guys, Hayden and Hunter, if they really wanted to do something, they could do something impressive. But before we get too distracted, Jeremy, one of the things I really want to talk to you about, and our audience definitely want to hear about, is Dog Foundation. So you and your folks got this going. So why don't you give us, the quick little snapshot about it, the inspiration to it, for our audience, and then we'll go in and we'll talk some more about it.
All right. Man, the inspiration for it was, at this time it's 11, but at the time I started talking to my parents about PTSD and stuff with dogs. I had 10 friends from my unit, from 1-5, that had committed suicide, since the war. So, in a span of a couple of years, 10 friends had committed suicide. And I asked my dad about it. I was like, how many friends have you ever had, commit suicide? And he's thinking, he's like, I don't know, maybe like 2 or whatever. And, when I told him that I had 10 friends that had killed themselves, he was definitely alarmed by that. Especially, I have my own, my own demons that I try to deal with too, with some of the things that come back from combat with you. And so, he definitely had an ear listening for it. And then maybe a month or two later, I'm on Facebook, and I've seen something about service dogs helping with PTSD. So I sent my dad and my stepmom a message because they own and run a dog boarding, grooming, training facility here in Houston. And I asked them, is this something that they can do? And have they ever heard of it or whatever? And my dad started looking into it right then, and talked to my stepmom, and they're, yeah, that's something we can do. And they really love the idea. They had never really thought that they could be part of helping out in something like that. And so we went to dinner, and we start throwing around names and everything. I'm like, no, it's got to be an acronym. Military love acronyms. So, we came up with Dogs Assisting Wounded GIs. And what we do is we train service dogs, and then we place them with the veteran that we've kind of vetted out and decided which one, is going to be best suited for the dog. And then we get the dog trained up and give it to them. Pretty much it's free of charge to the veteran. All of our funding comes from donations and fundraisers and that sort of thing. And, the dogs are expensive by the time it's all said and done. You have over $20,000 invested in the dog. The training takes, just around a year, and you get all the boarding and the training and the feeding and all that stuff, and finding the veteran and then getting them down here to do that. They have to do 2 or 3 months of training with the dog too for a couple days a week, and so it's quite a process. But we've been around right at 2 years now, and we've been able to put out 2 dogs. And right now though, we have 1 dog that this Friday is going to do his graduation and go with his veteran. And we have another one that will be ready in about 2 months. And then we have a puppy that we are training starting today, actually. We started him, they're training about 8 months old, and he's 8 months, so we just brought him in today. He's been in a foster family, and now we've got him in there. And that's what we're doing. And our focus is strictly, combat veterans dealing with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. And that's just because that's the 2 things that affect me and affect most of most of my brothers that I served with. So we've kind of got it down to that. And if they have any other type of injuries or handicaps from whatever, we'll train the dogs according to do X, whatever else task wise they need. But man, it's just been pretty awesome, It's just a really cool thing to not only to give back, but just to reconnect with, I wasn't ever really a big part of the veteran community, and now I'm reconnecting with all my, my Marine brothers, and, just hanging out and seeing people that, you know, we're like-minded, shared experiences, and we can kind of be comfortable around one another, and this has been cool.
Man, that's awesome. So, like, Tom's a big advocate for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
He got
absolutely
himself a little, you know, I'll call him like a little Belgian Malinois, Athena, and like that dog, you know, break glass in case of war. It's amazing, like, what a dog, you know, can do. You know, I've had this, you know, conversation similarly with, you know, several people. You know, one guy being, you know, Jim Stanek, the guy that started Paws and Stripes, mm-hmm. Army infantry guy, you know, and like my dog, I have a golden doodle, and she's sitting over here right now, like, making fun of me, but that dog has saved lives, mine being one, a hairdresser being another, because, like, I got the worst haircut ever, and I went into, like, probably the worst rage that I'd felt. No, like, I'm being all serious, because I didn't think something so small, like, because I'm bald, right? And I grew my hair out for a short period of time, and, like, I had to get it cut for this picture, and, like, this, you know, how hard is it to screw up, like, dude hair versus, like, a chick hair? And,
right.
You know, like, I lost my skull, and, like, you know, it was just a dark period in my life, and, you know, like, I went home, and, like, I was thinking things that just weren't right, and this was one of the big indicators, you know, Jeremy's, you know, known that I've shared my testimony with him on in the past, and this is just one of these times where I was, like, the switch was flipped, you know, it didn't make sense, but the monster was in control, the enemy was in control, and, you know, my dog, like, immediately identified that, you know, and just loved on me and brought me to a level of calmness that, you know, I just went back down to the hair place and was like, I just need to get this fixed versus going back in there and, like, terminating somebody.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, like, it's amazing what a dog can do to you and do for you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, this is a big debate, you know, in the veteran community, because, you know, some guys are a little too dependent, you know, for too long, and, you know, it turns, you know, from, you know, a tool to help rehabilitate and reintegrate to, you know, like, almost a crutch or like an attention tool in some cases. But, you know, like, you'll never hear me say, like, anything bad about dogs, because, like, here's something so simple, you know, God threw it on the, you know, on the earth, you know, to be a companion for mankind. And, you know, it's like, these things really make a difference. And, you know, knowing the nonprofit world the way I do, like, the fact that you've ramped up in just 2 short years and, you know, you're looking at, you know, having close to 6 dogs in a circulation by the end of the year. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And that's, like, that's 6 guys and gals that you can, like, you can go to sleep at night going, like, you know, their chances of making it through this are that much better. And,
I mean,
you know, these statistics are scary, you know, like, they're scary statistics, but the fact that you, like, identified an issue, you said, you know, 10 guys, like, that's the wrong answer, and you're putting 10 guys and gals back into the population through your program. So, like, one, you have my full support, bro. Like, I love what you're doing, and any way we can help, we will.
Absolutely.
And that's awesome. I appreciate everything you said and done, man. You know, one thing that I tell people, but our recipients too, you know, the dog's not a magic pill. Nothing is. You know, it's like, it's just like you said, it's a tool. It's a tool that you're going to use to try to, you know, to try to get through something. And the end goal for everyone should be, you know, to be rehabilitated and to be able to get back to society. And, if, you know, the way I see it, the dogs really can just kind of help that to get started, you know, kind of just help you to get out and to be able to do things and to feel secure. And then after, you know, after a while, I mean, hopefully you don't need the dog anymore. You know, hopefully the dog just becomes your, loved companion that's there with you at the house and all. But it's really hard for me even to speak on it too much, especially since how that's what we do is get people dogs. But I totally feel what you're saying too. When you see people that are just looking for attention with their dogs, or they've got dogs that definitely aren't service dogs, but you put a vest on it and they want to be argumentative and take this dog anywhere, and they've got this, I love pit bulls. I used to have a Rottweiler, a Rottweilers. I love these dogs, but when you deal with guys that already have, anger and psychological issues, and then they walk into Denny's with a huge pit bull on a leash, and they're telling you it's a service dog. Well, I mean, that dog's intimidating. So it's not what people are, people are going to react to that in a certain way. So when you start having people doing things like that, it just starts putting a bad taste in not just the civilian's mouth, but it puts a bad taste in the other veterans' mouth too, who are like, hey, man, this isn't really what we're about, I mean, I'm all about, dignity and respect, and, I want to feel that from people, but I want to, I just want to be respected and carry myself with dignity. And, I see a lot of the veterans that maybe aren't, following those same guidelines, for lack of a better way to say it. And so that's what this is, man, really been kind of pissing me off lately is, I just see veterans doing things and saying things that I don't necessarily agree with that they should, it's America, we fight for freedom. You can do whatever and say whatever you want, but you get a lot of guys who now just seem to be, attention seeking and, want to be, play the victims on stuff and that is what that's what we're about.
We're like our own worst enemy, right? Because we're creating this narrative that, shouldn't exist. Like, we should be victors, not victims. And, I'm all about utilizing tools. I know guys, obviously, we were talking about Chad as one, another, guy that I served with. He actually... I had the pleasure of being his leader for a short period of time. A guy by the name of Todd, he's out in San Diego, and he's got a program, called a POW MIA, which is a little bit, it's not the flag, as people think, like the POW flag, but it's, pugilistic offensive, warrior tactics, which is, an MMA program, and Todd, works with these guys, and, they use the mats, they use the gym, to find, that replacement therapy. They find something that, guys can hold on to. You see these programs utilizing golf, utilizing, everyone knows, my affiliation with Veteran Outdoors, getting guys out in a field. These are wonderful tools, but the dog is a little bit different than that. One, it's an experience, but it's a perpetual experience. It's a perpetual, tool that is with you all the time. Like I take guys out hunting and fishing and do that stuff. Like they go back and they can reflect on it. Like my dog licks my face every day, so it's a different experience. And, once you get past the tool aspect, now you're the companion aspect. And like you said, I love your approach. For this period of time, they need that to succeed and reintegrate. But at the end of it, they have more than a trophy on the wall. They have more than, a skill set. They have a companion. They have something, that brotherhood, that fellowship that, they're lacking, that complete understanding. You look at your dog, and your dog, accepts what you are, who you are, where you've been, what you've done. Kind of like your brothers in arms. You can look at your brothers in arms, and, it's like they accept who you are, what you are, where you've been, and what you've done. And, that's what's sad is, some of it's, been perverted. At SHOT Show, you see these guys, out at the club, Tommy and I were joking. We're at the Range 15 movie trailer premiere that Tom's, you know, in the movie of Range 15. And, you know, there are guys with service dogs in this Vegas club. And it's like, oomch, 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 you know, like, you know, like, you know, you got smoke machines going, you got lasers, you got, like, people walking around with service dogs. Like, homie, like, you're in the wrong spot. You know, like, if it's that bad, like, you shouldn't be here.
You know, and we had that conversation. I think part of it, too, is just the disconnect where it's like there are certain things that I, you know, and Toby, you and I have had this conversation. I don't hunt anymore since I came back from being overseas. Like, there is something in my head that just is not down with getting into a tree stand anymore. It's just I did when I was a kid. You know, I loved it. I love being outdoors. I still like to hike. It's just it's not my thing. And it's like, you know, Jeremy, your point sort of like, you know, the dog matters. It's like I've got, you know, my dog is seen as a retired working dog from Lackland. You know, we got her because she broke her leg. But it's like people – I still have to explain to people in my neighborhood that she's not going to hurt them just because of the way she looks. I mean, she's a doofus. She's a hippie. Like, literally, the only one a dog wants to smell is flowers, man. I swear to God. It's hilarious. But just because she looks a certain way or just because, you know, you hear her bark and it's just I think that – like everything in this world, veteran, civilian, any other way, like a good thing can be taken to be, you know, can be taken for a ride and sort of, you know, perverted to something that's not necessarily as positive as it could be. And I just love what you guys are doing and how you're bringing that focus to, you know, people that really need it and sort of not only helping them, you know, have a dog and have that companion, but also sort of get that help and that transition to continue to, you know, reacclimate and reintegrate. And I just think it's an amazing program, man. It's really good work.
Man, I appreciate it. Just a side bit on it too. We've been doing we'll do like veteran grappling classes. I've been for me the grappling and the MMA and just training in general. That's something that really kind of brought me out of a dark spot. So you know, we do classes and, you know, like free classes for vets for grappling, and then we've been doing some seminars. We're actually probably going to do another one here in May or late May, early June. Be like an MMA seminar. But we've been doing a lot of stuff, man. We had like a taco cook-off where we had some bands and tacos and beer. We had a chili cook-off. You know, we're just all about getting the veterans together and just get everybody, you know, back outside. There's been so many at the taco thing we did. There was at least five or six guys that came out there that were Marine vets that just got out pretty recently. They're like, man, I don't go anywhere. But, like, someone told me you were a Marine and, you know, you are doing this. So I came out here. And, man, by the end of the night, they were hanging out with us. You know, we're having beers, cooking tacos. And it was just like a barracks party. You know, it was just really cool to see because, like, we hadn't been out in 2 years. You know, I've been sheltering in place the last 2 years of the house. And I'm like, man, yep. You're just in the wrong group, you know. I mean, maybe your high school friends just, you know, they don't get it, or, you know, you've moved past that, or you're just different now, but you just got to find a new circle. So it's just really cool when we do stuff like that and you get, you know, the other veterans involved, and then, you know, you just see, like, man, we're all brothers. We start getting along and carrying on so quickly that it's, you know, it's pretty remarkable.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, like, it's amazing, like, the connections that you get and the opportunities. One thing that, you know, really helped me, and I know, Jeremy, you and I have talked about this, you know, on several different occasions, is, like, you know, getting that connection and getting dialed in and wired in the veteran community, you know, a big positive of that is that, you know, you rekindle like that fellowship, or you rekindle that brotherhood that, you know, was lacking, that was missing. And, you know, while like maybe it's not the guy from, you know, in your case 1-5, or, you know, in my case, like first of the 23rd, or one of the many units, you know, that I was in, or, in, you know, Tom's case, you know, Ranger Regiment, while you get the opportunity to do that, you also get to see some of the grateful nation that's out there. You know, I wanted to, like, you know, compliment you because I saw you not too long ago in a picture with, you know, the 41st president. George Hubert Walker Bush. That must have been pretty exciting. Like, you got to meet one of the great presidents of our lifetime.
Man, mm-hmm. And now you know he was really really nice, but and his wife, the former first lady, you know, she was just so cool. I haven't had grandparents, you know, grandmothers in a couple of years, so it is rarely, you know, after your grandparents pass away, you're not around a lot of, you know, necessarily old people, old women. And, man, she was just like my grandmother. It was just so crazy. She's like, oh, you know, because I told them that I served under their son, you know, and so I was like, it's just like you're talking about their boy, they're proud. And she's like, oh, you know, you was under my boy. And, you know, she just started talking to me like my grandma would talk. So I'm like, this is just crazy, man. Like, the Bushes are just, you know, it was a cool experience, and I had no idea that I was going to, you know, see him or meet him or talk to him. But it was at an Astros game, so it just kind of worked out, and I got to spend a couple minutes with him, so it was really cool.
Yeah, no, like, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting, you know, George Sr. You know, I had the pleasure on several occasions of meeting, you know, George W., and one, what a class act. You know,
yeah.
You can say whatever you want about his intelligence. You can say whatever you want about his speaking ability and his Mike Tyson vocabulary. But, like, the guy was on our team. Like, there was no question in my mind, mm-hmm. like, when he shook my hand and looked me in the eye, you know, like, that he was for me. You know, like, no matter – the first time I met him was, like, pre-war, and – you know, I got selected to be his escort. He had just become president. He was making his first trip back to Texas. Air Force One was landing at Fort Hood, where I was stationed at the time, and I'd been selected to be his escort. And, you know, I was really nervous about that because, you know, like, here I am, a Canadian, you know, and I'm being asked to, like, be around the president of the United States. And it was like – so I was, like, super scared. I'll be honest with you. I was like a buck sergeant. You know, I don't think I'd been an E-5 for, you know, 6 months probably, maybe it was a year at that point in time, but not very long, you know, and here I am being bestowed this, like, one, it's an honor, but two, it's a huge monumental task. And I accidentally, you know, like, kicked his dog, you know, which I'll save that story for another time, you know, but I accidentally deliberately did it. You know, the dog was about to, you know, take a leak on my leg, and, you know, I just went into, like, you know, no, you're not going to, like, pee on me. You know, like, and he was cool about it because he's like, you know, Sarn, you know, I wouldn't let a dog pee on me either. You know, you worked hard for that uniform. You should protect it. And I knew, like, from that moment, like, he was for me. You know, no matter where I was from or what it was, I was in the uniform of the United States soldier. I was in his military. He was my commander in chief, and he was for me. Even if I was a bonehead, in the way that I handled that situation, he was still for me. Meeting him later in theater, meeting him at other locations, you know, like, still for me. You know, I never doubted what side he was on and what, you know, how he felt about me or any of my comrades. And, you know, it just gave me the sense of confidence that I wouldn't be put into a position that, you know, he didn't feel was righteous. And it's interesting, you know, like, I just watched this documentary on, you know, Bush Sr. called 41 on 41, where 41 different people spoke about George Hubert Walker and Bush, and just the same thing, the mind-blowing, you know, honor that they pay him for, like, saying, like, here's the guy that, you know, he kept his word, and the one time that he felt that he didn't, keep his word, he felt that he didn't deserve to be the president anymore, and it made him physically ill. And, like, that's mind-blowing, you know, that, you know, we've been blessed in our lifetime to be around leaders like that, you know. And I'm not just saying that just because, you know, they're a particular party. I'm just saying, like, that's just the character that they were. And, and it's awesome, you know. Like, when I saw your picture with him, I believe it was an Astros game or something like that. And, you know, it's just, like, I thought it was super awesome. I was like, man, like, you lucky dog, no pun included.
No, man, and that's like my bucket list, man. That's one guy I would love to meet, just because I think my feelings for him are really along the same lines as yours. I've never got the opportunity to meet him, but just you know, having served under him, that's always what I felt and what the others, you know, in my unit felt. Man, we just felt like this guy's in it for us, and you know, that's why, like, to this day, man, I get real defensive when, you know, and man, people still talk so bad about him, and you know, mm-hmm. I always get defensive about it, like, you know, hey, maybe, you know, there's a lot of stuff I won't argue about, you know, things he did or what. I mean, you know, hey, maybe that happened, and maybe he wasn't the greatest because of that, but as far as his commitment to the troops and, like you said, just being, you know, being on the team, that there was no doubt about that with them. Man, there was no doubt at all. He was for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Jeremy, hey, bud, you know, I hate cutting you short, man. I feel like you and I could talk all night. I know Tom feels the same way.
Hell
but,
yeah.
Tell us, well, tell our audience where they can learn more about Dog Foundation, and then anything else you want to plug, you know, we got your back. So go ahead, tell everyone where they can find and more information, how they can donate, or anything that you want.
So they can donate and find information about everything at our website. It's dogfoundation.com, so dawgfoundation.com. You can go there, and there's just about everything. We're also on Facebook. Just look for Dog Foundation. And, man, that's really about it. May 7th, Invicta, check it out if you got UFC Fight Pass. Tonya Evinger will be fighting main event that night. She's going to defend her 135 title. And if you've never seen her fight, she's better than any girl in the UFC. So check her out, and you won't be disappointed.
Well, again, Jeremy, thanks for coming on the show. You know, we're excited for the 4-ounce team, you know, and all your success. Congratulate everybody for, you know, Stu and the Nun and Tom. You know, make sure you pass our word on, and give a big shout-out to the Black Beast for, you know, his best post-fight interview ever.
Absolutely.
And we're just excited for Daniel, to keep grinding it out. He's a talented guy. We love watching him. But everybody down there, we're excited for you. And you know, if you don't do the pro boxing thing and you stay with MMA, you know, we're excited for you. Keep the streak alive, and you have our support, and we hope that you'll consider coming back on our show.
Man, awesome. I appreciate it, man. Thanks. It was cool talking to you guys.
Thanks, all right, man. Good night, and
right.
Thanks again. My man, you're like, I don't know how we do it, but we always like tend to get some pretty awesome some awesome guests. You know, we're pretty fortunate. You know, like how we do it, I don't know. You know, from 4-star generals like General Abrams to, you know, Academy Award winning guys to, you know, last week, you know, you know, 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, we had Tim Kennedy, like, no big deal. Like, it was last week. We had Tim Kennedy, no big deal. You know, and, you know, one, Tom, you know, it's always a pleasure having you on. So why don't you tell everybody what you got going on? Because I know your movie, Range 15, is about to hit theaters.
Yes.
It's the GI Film Fest. And then it's so tell us about the main theatrical release of that. We're excited to hear.
So two big things going on in Range 15 movie land. One, our official premiere will be May the 27th at the GI Film Festival. Tickets are actually on sale through gifilmfestival.com if you want to come premiere and hang out with us. Tickets are $121, which before you're like, dude, one, all that money goes directly back to the GI Film Festival to help them continue their awesome mission of supporting military and veteran filmmaking, which is why we wanted to premiere there, because we really believe in that message. And two, those tickets not only include dinner, but also an open bar after the premiere, which is where we're all going to be partying. So when you think about it, if you're in the D.C. area on the 27th of May, that's an absolute steal. Secondly, be watching Facebook, because here in short order, there will be tickets going on sale for the nationwide Range 15 release, which will be happening June the 15th. Right now, we've got about 300 theaters lined up. We're getting more online every day. It's blowing up huge. They will be in basically all around the bases,
most major areas. So be on the lookout for that. Tickets are going to go on sale right now, April the 20th. So be watching Facebook, you know, the Range 15 page on Facebook. You'll see it there. If you want to find me, Tom Amenta, I'll be posting it all over the interwebs. Toby, I know you will. I know the radio show will be. So, yeah, things are going to go on sale for that. And we just got word that the Motion Picture Association of America has refused to rate the movie because of the gratuitous violence and overall immature subject matter. Our director got they went back to him and they're like, we can't believe you even sent this to us. So this movie is
on one hand
again,
you're like, is this a compliment or is this the reality of our maturity level?
Oh, it only goes to reinforce what every veteran knows, and that is what happens in the team room or what happens on deployment. That is what is in this movie. And so the MPAA just sort of reinforced that we're on the right track because they're horrified, truly horrified about this. And we've been laughing our butts off about it. So, you know, we will see.
Yeah, I always find it funny, like, how Hollywood feel the need to, like, Hollywood up, like, certain things. When if they, like, really knew, you know, the reality of, like, what goes down in combat, that would never French anything up, you know, because of course everyone wants the bigger, cooler explosions or the, you know, was it the commando level, you know, death counts, as well as like the never ending magazine clips.
Wanted the cheat code for never ending bullets. I always thought that would be awesome. Like, I never had to reload. That would be great.
Wouldn't that be
like, I kept pushing that bullet button, you know, like, I kept pushing that bullet button, but it just made, like, my magazines fall out. It didn't give me any more.
I never figured that out. Never figured out what to know.
So frustrating. You know, and apparently, like, the never-ending bullet button is also super light. You don't have to carry them. Mm. They just magically appear. And, you know, your back doesn't, like, get compressed. And, you know, you don't age as fast. But apparently, you know, we were
your armor doesn't weigh as much. That's what we're doing wrong.
But Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure, you know, having you like pinch hit again. You know, you're becoming a staple on the show.
Anytime,
really,
man, you know that.
To come out. Yeah, we're super excited for you. We're excited, you know, for your, like everyone in that involved in that. But you know, we're excited for your family. You know, and you know, glad, you know, Katie Guns is out there, you know, lifting heavy things and doing the athletic world proud. Keep that dog out of trouble. And, you know, again, tell the audience how they can follow you.
So you can find me, Tommy Amenta is my Instagram. Tom C. Amenta is me on Twitter. I'm currently negotiating actually to get Tommy Amenta for my Twitter, which I never thought in my life I'd have to say that. But it's true. And then you can find me on Facebook at Tom Amenta, where you will, then Facebook is absolutely the place to find out all about Range 15. So make sure you hit up facebook.com/range15 for all the updates on the movie. You guys are not going to want to miss this.
And speaking of Facebook, we hope people will start following us on Facebook. It's kind of crazy that we have more live listeners than followers on Facebook. And, you know, 10 times the downloads that we have on, you know, Facebook likes. So, like, maybe someday we'll actually be popular on Facebook versus just being popular in people's earphones. But follow us on Facebook at Stu and the Nun Radio, on Twitter at Stu and the Nun, and or you can just follow me at Toby Nun or Toby James Nun on Facebook, because, you know, like, I get all official when I'm like on social medias. But if you want to have a not so serious conversation, just follow at Toby Nun on Twitter. And Tom, another great show. Thanks for coming on. Look forward to seeing everybody next week. We have a great, great guest lined up, so we'll be announcing that midweek. So everybody enjoy the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. And y'all are awesome. Oh,
Talk soon, brother.
We're going to – oh, hold on one second. We have a special the producer said we have a special person we got to bring on the air real fast. Is this like a dude by the last name of Capel?
That would be correct.
What's up, brother? How you doing?
What's up, my friend? How are we?
If you play Call Me Maybe, Jackson, I'm hanging up on a principle.
Active duty, like real life soldier, calling into the show, my man. Hey, we know you're getting ready to ETS soon. We want to thank you for like an amazing career service. You're a great non-commissioned officer, and we look forward to you coming back to Texas so you can actually, you know, like do something in Texas.
Well, yeah, brother. I mean, I can't wait to make a difference anywhere I go. I mean, you guys are great in your times, respectfully, and. You know, the way things are changing nowadays, I tell my soldiers, I'm like, look, I'm just done with the military now, unfortunately. You know, hopefully you can grow up in this system, but I can't keep going further. So it's time for me to get out and do great things on the other half. And, you know, with the path that you and Tommy and, you know, everybody has set forth in front of me, I don't think it's going to be too hard.
Well, you know, the Army's a changing. You know, and, you know, we've had, you know, General Abrams on here, you know, not too long ago talking about some of the changes, and some are like super positive and, you know, some are a little bit different. You know, and of course, you know, we always, you know, we want the military to be like us, but we also fear change at the same time. And, you know, there's growing pains and there's shrinking pains in the current state, shrinking pains, but, you know, it still doesn't take away from what we did or what the guys ahead of us or, you know, or behind us are going to do. So, like, I'm super proud of everyone that raised their hand, signed their name, and put in. You especially, you're one of my favorite active guys right now. So thanks for everything, and glad that you'll be getting out and coming back to Texas. And, you know, I believe that you're going to continue to serve in a capacity with the VA. They need people like you, and so I'm excited for you to continue to do stuff. But that's all we got for tonight. So,
well, hey, man, I appreciate the shout-out. So y'all keep doing what you're doing. And, Tommy, I'll send you a ringtone here pretty quickly.
Hey, congratulations, all right. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah. All right, brother.
All right,
I'll take it easy.
Another great show. Awesome. Great night. Justin, thanks for calling in. Tom, always a pleasure. We'll see everybody next week. Good night, everybody.
Night, guys.